Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia, and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national, and local focus on gender, sexuality, and feminism.
Hello and welcome. In the month of August, we celebrate Wear a Purple Day, which is targeted towards LGBTQI plus youth to remind them that they have a right to be proud of who they are and who they are becoming. One of the biggest challenges facing LGBTQI plus people is getting into positions of leadership. Stereotypes play a big role in our ability to fulfill leadership positions and also in undermining our ability to fulfill leadership positions. So in today's episode, we explore the challenges LGBTQ plus people face in taking on these leadership roles. Our first speaker today is Jordan Emery. Jordan is the chief executive of Ambulance Tasmania and a former graduate of Charles Sturt University. Hello, Jordan. Thank you for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Cliff. My name is Jordan Emery. I'm an intensive care paramedic and the chief executive officer of Ambulance Tasmania. So my role is to lead an organisation of about 1,000 employees, including volunteers, doctors, nurses, paramedics, patient transport officers, corporate staff and communication centre personnel to deliver ambulance services right across the state of Tasmania, including Bass Strait Islands. I previously worked in various clinical and then leadership and senior leadership roles with New South Wales Ambulance.
Fantastic, Jordan. Thank you for joining us here today. You've obviously made it into really senior leadership, and it's always amazing seeing someone from the LGBT family achieve that. How has your journey been getting there?
I think it's been interesting and challenging, and at times it's been effortless, in reference to my sexuality. But I think, it's not always been the case that the fact that I identify as gay has been a huge barrier to my success. And there are certainly times when it has made me a significant outlier in a field of candidates or within a leadership team or within teams more broadly. And at times that has had its challenges, particularly around people's understanding of what that means and how it might impact on them.
Well, how do you manage these challenges, Jordan?
I have always tried to be authentic and stay true to who I am, including not shying away from opportunities because I am gay. But I recognise that at times it's been met with quite harsh criticism or homophobia. Just a few years ago, I was leading some very significant cultural reform in New South Wales and was the subject of quite abhorrent homophobic slurs, which I'm sharing with you because they ended up heavily published in the Newcastle Herald, the Newcastle main newspaper. And of course, having those experiences is challenging. It's sort of an attack on who you are, who we are as people, but also an attack on something that is entirely out of your control. And any personal attacks on any individuals, any actions that dehumanize individuals for any reason, can be really challenging leadership hurdles to overcome. Like, I think in any event, when human beings seek to dehumanize other people, it's to make them less worthy of contribution, less worthy of participating fully in society. And as I said, that might not just be around someone's sexual orientation. It might be around their gender, their race, their ethnicity, their religion. Fundamentally, it's about minimizing that person's worth and contribution. And for me, that was whilst I was in a leadership role and therefore, sought to call into question my own leadership capability.
And that's a very interesting comment you make, because all those factors you've just mentioned, gender, ethnicity, et cetera, are really no measure of a person's skill or ability. How did you deal with that while being true to yourself?
When I think about it, I think about this fundamental reality, which is that I am gay, I was born gay, I will forever be gay, and it's something entirely out of my control. In the exact same way that I was born white and will forever be white, in the exact same way that I am male, in the exact same way that I am 35 years old. And so when people ask you to be something that you are not, but that request or that expectation is something entirely out of your control, it feels futile to me to argue that point. So I guess what I mean by that, Cliff, is I am who I am. There are things about me that I can't change. I also don't think I should be reduced to my gender, sexual orientation, skin colour, age. I should be judged on my merits, like all people should be judged on my merits, and I should be judged on my character, the way I show up and lead and care for others, not on things that are fundamentally outside of my control.
Definitely, and I can see the challenge that you may have because of the environment you're in and the politics that might play within that environment.
Look, I'm on a journey, Cliff, like all of us are, that recognises our fundamental imperfection as human beings. I think for a long time we've been led down the wrong path, particularly in leadership cultures within emergency service organisations, that focus heavily on command and control ideas of leadership, and that, you know, posit all the power and decision making within the leader as the knower of all things. And the reality is that's absurd and entirely unachievable for any single individual. So pretty regularly I share with my team mistakes I've made. I'm very willing to not know the answers and to fall short, and to rely on the profound wisdom and expertise of the people that I'm lucky enough to lead.
Basically, what it sounds like you're saying to us, Jordan, which is beautiful, is this notion of being authentic and being vulnerable and sharing that vulnerability.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think it is important to be vulnerable. It is important to be authentic. They are critical enablers for building trust at an individual and at a team level. But it's also about affirming my own commitment to inclusivity as an organisational value. Because if I have all the answers, if I make all the decisions, then it is impossible that those things could not be separated from my own personal story, my own experience. And the reality is, if we want inclusive organisations where diversity is celebrated and respected, that includes organisations that are inclusive in their decision-making, idea sharing and innovation generating pursuits, not just in the demographic composition of our workforce.
But at the same time, how has being queer helped you? What can queer people bring to leadership roles, and what have you brought in your own experience to your leadership roles?
I think at times it has taught me a level of empathy for the suffering that other people experience, the people who don't feel they belong. And I've, you know, I share some common ground with those individuals. And it's been a powerful learning for me to understand what it might look like not to fit into ordinary social norms or what society describes as the normal way of being. And that's an important skill to have, because you learn to appreciate and understand people's experience from a different perspective. And alongside authenticity, empathy is one of the most critical competencies for leadership, and a really powerful way to engage with your people and to actually achieve both cultural and organisational change. I think the other part for me is that I have been able to shake some of the unfortunate stereotypes that men are subjected to in their day-to-day way of being. Lots of people throughout my career have espoused this idea of firm, tough leadership as the way to drive organisations forward or to get results. And it does hark back to that chain of command and control style of leadership that I touched on a few moments ago. I haven't been burdened by those stereotypes. And I say burdened by because there's a lot of heterosexual men who are burdened by those stereotypes too. So having not been burdened by those stereotypes, I have been able to more freely embrace vulnerability. I have been able to embrace a more gentle, compassionate, tender side of leadership. And can I say, across Ambulance Tasmania and indeed across my time in New South Wales Ambulance, it was largely celebrated and welcomed by our people who were looking for a different style of leadership.
Thank you, Jordan. And what advice might you have for other people, for young queer people who aspire to leadership roles, for queer people who are currently in leadership roles?
The advice I'll give is that authenticity is profoundly important, and it is a really valuable trait to have as a leader. And I recognise that in saying that, showing up authentically, is difficult for different people, depending on their location, their culture, their family circumstances, their workplace. It can be really challenging to be our full selves at work when we're in workplaces or leading teams that don't embrace, celebrate, or support that. But to not be your full self, to not show up authentically, I think will, over the long term, significantly negatively impact you as an individual, but it will remain a constant barrier to you building trusting relationships. And trusting relationships are really at the center of leadership. It really does begin with trust, and you have to be able to be authentic in those interactions to build trust with people.
Thank you, Jordan. My second speaker today is Dr. Lee Stevenson. Dr. Stevenson was named as one of Australia's top 50 LGBT leaders in 2020 and currently is a co-director for Research Centre at the Australian National University. Elise, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks so much, Cliff. So I'm Dr. Elise Stevenson. I'm the Deputy Director of the Global Institute for Women's Leadership at the Australian National University. I'm very fortunate to study, come from a political science and international relations background there, but work with a phenomenal research institute that was founded and is chaired by our first and only female Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, doing all different kinds of research around gender and sexuality, leadership, from kind of topics as broad as looking at the space sector to diplomacy, national security, to climate change. You name it, I've probably done something in it. I'm really interested in the diverse ways in which gender and sexuality intermix in our world and what that means for leaders in particular. So a bit about my research, and I guess at a personal level, what brought me here. So I come from kind of a rural background. I live in a rural community of about 500 in New South Wales. And I guess I've seen over the years of travelling around Australia and interacting as a queer person myself with the world, and particularly during the marriage plebiscite in Australia, that there are some really unique challenges to being a queer person in the world, and particularly for gender minorities as well, or minoritised groups. And really just this obligation that we can improve our world, and there are things in which we should be doing to do that. So really, it's been a pretty big journey to get here, but I'm really grateful for the amazing team and projects I get to work on now.
Thank you, Elise. And I picked on you use the word minoritized instead of minority, which often gets used. And that is so true, because minoritizing is an active act by which we separate a group and treat them as inferior or different from the rest of society. So what challenges have you observed in your research?
On the kind of negative side of things, there are a number of challenges out there for LGBTIQ plus people who are in leadership. And I suppose I can talk more specifically to my research in politics or national security. We see things like the ability or inability to be out and kind of authentically yourself can impact on people, and often in these really high profile roles, there's both high levels of visibility as well as crippling invisibility, where maybe you can't feel like you can represent yourself truly, or you have to keep parts of yourself hidden. So that can be an issue, which is really complicated by any kind of issues around workplace belonging or feeling sense of isolation or stigma. I mean, we know that online harassment and abuse is an issue. In fact, one of my most recent projects on queer people in politics in Australia found that online, and particularly looking at Twitter, queer politicians didn't necessarily receive much more harassment than their non-queer counterparts, but they did receive far more vitriolic and personal and, you know, really targeted harassment, which really impacts then on individuals and perhaps their ability to be in public realm in the first place. There is a, I guess, an identity tax put on LGBTIQ plus people, kind of these concepts of a glass cliff. So we do often see that when it comes to positions of leadership, women or minoritized groups or LGBTIQ plus people, they can often be finally given that position of leadership right at the moment in which there are maybe the most challenges, where the role is really under a huge amount of kind of crisis situation or high levels of scrutiny. In other words, roles that are kind of doomed to fail.
I can definitely see your point there, and I can imagine how hard it is to be out in leadership positions for queer people. Too often I see leaders who are not that comfortable being that public about their identity. And I tend to think, you know, I wish you would be, because that importance of that representation and visibility. But I am cognizant of the challenges. What have you observed?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, we certainly have quite a lot of data on this from kind of a gender perspective, looking at women in leadership. We see this sort of trend where often you might be the only one in the room, right? And that makes it, or you're the first, and that can make it really hard to raise issues that maybe are more personal to you. So we often see it, you know, the first woman who gains a position of leadership, she might have actually the least amount of power to make more feminist policies, for instance, or to kind of stand up for particular issues from a gender or women's perspective. Similar kind of trends could be seen in terms of LGBTIQ plus too. There is certainly a bit of an expectation that you can't be a woman or a queer person who only cares about women or queer people. And so there's kind of this double bind that I suppose a lot of leaders are put in when they do make it to a leadership position, because they have to be seen as, you know, using quotation marks here, balanced, right? They're not too invested in a topic. And this is problematic from a lot of lenses. We know that the world isn't neutral. We know that having a nuanced understanding of issues is really important, but that can impact on things. I think depending on your background, your upbringing, you know, all other sorts of intersecting factors too, it might not be safe for you to be out as a leader. And there might be other kind of factors that play into it too. And we know that workplaces, there's been some positive moves, but we are still in a place, particularly for leadership positions, where the high levels of scrutiny, the media targeting, the level of trolls, backlash, these are all real concerns. So how do you actually go about navigating them? And I guess even if you yourself don't experience that, there might be a perception that, well, there's so many challenges out there, I don't want to add one more target to my back. So that is a challenge. But I do agree with you too. I think it's really important that, and I think looking at some of the statistics and young people that I work with, can be up to, you know, 20-25% or kind of a quarter of the next generation who are identifying more with LGBTIQ plus identities. So if that's the case, you know, actually this is and should be become much more normalized to feel like, hey, I can bring this, you know, it doesn't have to be the center of my work, it doesn't have to be the center of who I am in every instance, but I should have the choice whether or not to do that.
And of course, there are benefits of being queer, benefits that being queer can bring to leadership positions, particularly, I suppose, in the work that you do in politics and national security. Has your research uncovered anything around that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we come to some of the diversity literature more broadly, there is a fairly well-established field, and this could be across gender or sexuality or ethnicity, socioeconomic status, disability. There's a good body of evidence that is growing around, you know, more diverse teams make higher performing teams, more productive teams, more profitable teams. So you could say there's a lot of utilitarian reasons. If you add into that things like being able to buckle or stymie groupthink. I work a lot in national security and intelligence sector. And in that case, diversity is really important for also being able to imagine every future possible scenario and really be able to see things from a very holistic point of view. So really map out the gaps. In addition to that, I mean, I just think it's wonderful. You know, I think that being a queer person myself, just on a totally personal level, I think that I can bring a lot more empathy. I feel like you can perhaps connect better with other people who have come from some sort of minoritized background. And in general, I think we need empathetic leaders who perhaps have gone through some difficult times, or who have different, I guess, perspectives and life upbringings and experiences of the workplace that can really add to having a much more holistic society, I suppose.
Fantastic. Any advice you might give younger queer people or other leaders listening in today?
In one of Julia Gillard's books, she talks about, because you can sometimes be the only person in the room, you need to be prepared. So know kind of what to expect. Might be that the higher levels of media scrutiny, it might be, all the kind of challenges that we mentioned at the start. So basically, we want to balance this idea of being pragmatic about some of the realities whilst also being radically transformative to try and fix the system. So arm yourself with information and tools to navigate those challenges. The final thing I'd say is there's so many different networks out there, even just a quick Google search will guide you in the direction of others, either networks or individuals that you could reach out to. And certainly whenever individuals reach out to me, I am so, so happy to help them. And likewise, I do a fair bit of cold contacting. So see who you think could help you in your onwards journey and certainly aim for it, because we're all here barracking for you.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's balanced this pragmatic reality of being prepared, but just there's a community here leading on us. Love that.
Absolutely. That's it.
Great. Thank you, Elise, for giving us so much to think about. I'm now joined by my co-hosts, Dr. Donna Bridges and Dr. Sonia Maria. Sonia, what did you think about what Elise was sharing with us about the challenges queer people face in taking on leadership and being their authentic selves?
Well, look, there was a couple of really good takeaways. And the first one was that when she spoke about knowing that you won't be able to change the world issues, and that you could be the first person in the room to talk about them, and that to come at it from a really sort of pragmatic perspective rather than trying to be radically transformative, which I thought was a great take-home point for queer people who are looking to go into leadership, that you're not going to change things overnight and that it will take time and to be patient. And the second one, which was quite frightening for me because I know how hard it is in leadership positions anyway when you feel exposed and vulnerable, was the expectation that you will be potentially targeted with more personalized attacks on social media, and to expect to have high media scrutiny more so than a heteronormative kind of, you know, role that you might be in. So, yeah, I think that was quite a frightening take-home point, but something to be mindful of.
Definitely. And I think those challenges, though, which we talk about in terms of the need to be pragmatic, the personal attacks that you get are not really limited to queer people, but any minority group trying to sort of spearhead into leadership in what we know is a very traditionally male masculine arena in terms of leadership positions. Donna, what are your observations?
Well, it's interesting. We can't change who we are, but we can challenge our own biases, can't we? And one of the problems, of course, with unconscious bias is that the bias is unconscious. We're not aware of it. So the only way to become aware of subconsciously held ingrained beliefs is to raise your own awareness, to think about it. Is it possible that I am biased? Is it possible that I'm thinking or believing in ways that might impact somebody else's career progression? And unconscious bias, I think it is really proven, does affect the progression of people of colour, women, gay men, lesbians, trans, and other gender and sexually diverse people. But of course, as we see with Elise and Jordan, it doesn't have to be that way.
What do you think about the fact that Jordan felt there was more authentic leadership because he was able to be more vulnerable?
I think it's about bringing your whole self to work, right? And I think that's the takeaway message, where you can be authentic, you know, as a leader, as a colleague, as a friend at work, when you can bring your whole self to work and you're not constantly having to censor yourself. I know I've done that, where you're not constantly having to worry about how you might be perceived. It gives you a lot more brain space to think about your job rather than about things and identities that you're not in control of and that you cannot really, that don't really impact your job.
That's such a valid point. The whole self, bringing the whole self, is something I really identify with too. And it's really challenging in high senior leadership roles where you're expected to be a particular way and not to exhibit certain types of emotions. Donna, you'll probably talk to this about women in trades. We did that with women in paramedicine. And there was a lot of not being able to bring your whole self to work, that you had to be a particular type of stereotyped way. And I do think Jordan's interview showed a really good way that he could bring his whole self to work.
Workplaces are very policed organisations, aren't they? People have expectations about how you should behave in a particular role or who you should be. So there's a lot of people who don't bring their whole selves to work, I think, unable to. And that those that people who are able to bring their whole selves to work don't understand what it's like for those that can't do that for whatever reason.
So I think the takeaway really is about, you know, how we can use our privilege, those who are in a privileged position to be able to take their authentic selves to work. How do we use that to make a space for other people? On that note, I'll thank my co-host, Dr. Donna Bridges and Dr. Sonia Maria, and thank you all for joining us for today's episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturt.